Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. His name is Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, I just like scrapped an intro for the first time I think ever on this podcast. I don't know what happened to me. I just hated the way my voice sounded. It's also Monday. That might be related. How are you?
It's really early for you too. It's like 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Are the daytimes.
Baseball not happening. East Coast road trip upcoming. I'm going to be here early afternoons now. Such a shake-up.
We're
going
to have a lot of time on our hands.
All this territory I don't have covered of the KTAR Arizona Sports offices, I will now overtake. Like, I obviously rule the nighttime and everything. Like, that's my ground to cover, but now I'm just going for the complete takeover. I'll just have to take some morning shifts from you or Matt, I guess. And
you watched too much Game of Thrones last night.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I never watched too much Game of Thrones. How dare you? This podcast, we are going to be doing something that we have done a few times before. I don't remember if we've done it every season, but at least like a season or two ago, we did this once where we kind of create our own awards. We did this at the mid-season award. You might remember I had an award entitled Thank You for Not Making Me Swan Dive Off a Cliff award I gave to DeAndre Ayton. So it's kind of goofy stuff like that. Some of them are more serious, but we're just kind of being weird and finding talk about the season as a whole in a different way. So I actually would like to start because I believe this is the biggest quote-unquote storyline or current time right now, which is that Igor Kokoskov still has his job, which we're still not sure about.
Not sure about it.
But my award is the appears to have sir goes to Igor Kokoskov, and this is a pretty deep explanation. There's obviously all of the things about the roster itself that we're going to get into, but this also goes to a guy who clearly has been going through his own struggles as a first-year head coach and is learning on the job, very much so, and we're not sure if he's a good coach, we're not sure if he's a bad coach, but he's clearly got some more growth to undergo for himself. Just with the way he's been slower to in-game adjustments, there's been moments in games, obviously, where he's just appeared lost, like the Boston game where there was confusion over them fouling or not, and then there was the late game against the Pelicans late in the year where he wandered onto the floor and got a technical foul, which is one of those technical fouls where the refs are like, dude, like, we have to call that on you. You're on the elbow. Like, what are you doing? So I have it two-layered like that where I'm saying it's impressive that he lasted this season, the full season, and then we'll see if he lasts till he makes it to the beginning of next season. But for him to make it through what the roster construction was and what it went through the entire season while also just going through the typical a lot of coaches in their first year, it's like Kenny Atkinson right now is going to get a lot of shine because of the way the Nets played in game one, and I think people are starting to become more aware nationally of how good of a coach he was. But he was a guy, like, I think me and you even talked about the first year Brooklyn played where we were like, oh, like, he's,
it's gonna happen.
Sometimes Quinn Snyder maybe is another one in Utah where it was immediately clear. Terry Stotts, same kind of thing, and we're not sure where Igor is on that range yet, so he's had to go through the struggles. And for this specific situation where this was hyped up to be a year where they were supposed to improve and they did not improve in the win total, and for him to survive it, I think was commendable enough to award.
All of his most egregious acts were just brain fart type of things.
Yeah.
But when you, I'm going to stand on this since game one when they won to the end of the season, for the most part, like, there were ebbs and flows as far as focus and stuff like that, but you could tell they were teaching real basketball, and I hope that that was a real thing that would continue on to next season and why I still don't want to shut the door on him being a good coach. But yeah, that was his, the narrative around him is just so weird because of the language stuff and like because he's quiet, because he doesn't get technicals. And I was talking about it with Jordan Bird, like, dude was literally a game away from everyone around here just feeling like it's it, this is done, and somehow got that team to respond and turn the season relatively around. And that's where I can't think of any other situation in sports where a guy was like that close to where we all felt like he's going to be canned, and then they go out and play hard for him. And it seems like everything that happened before that wasn't really losing the locker room, but it's like something happened to that team. And I kind of want to find out, because we never really got down to the bottom of, like, was there a meeting, anything like that.
And we know this was a thing because the Suns put out a story where they put out a story through Gambo and through us where it was that he was remaining on until the end of the season. And the need for them to actually do that suggests that there was something along those lines. There was definitely a perception out there for sure, and I think there was actually something to it internally where he was really close to losing his job. And that was the week, of course, of the Arnovitz story where they had to project that they were stable and everything, so that had something to do with it as well. But
you hope it's not just driven by PR and looks and what they want to look like. That's what's also scary about it.
I looked up a couple of things for this. I'll just briefly state Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, Isaiah Kanan started. We have talked about that extensively throughout this podcast the entire season, so we don't need to go into it further.
Well, I can't promise that.
Interesting. All right, a little teaser for later. Games missed. Devin Booker missed 18 games. DeAndre Ayton missed 11. TJ Warren missed 39. At the beginning of the season, I would have told you those are going to be the Suns' three best players. And that combines to, quick math in the head, 68 games, I believe. Oh, one short of 69. That's a bummer. Oubre, who comes in, and then he's the Suns' either second or third best player, you would say. They only had him for 40 games. So he supplanted, I guess, the time Warren missed. But at the same time, those two guys should be playing together.
Yeah, ideally.
You shouldn't have to do that. They had 16 different players start in a game. They had 28 starting lineups.
I mean, last season they had like 16 different point guard starts, so I don't know if that's a big deal.
Speaking of point guard starting, I went through and did the unthinkable. I did a timeline of the entire point guard, who started when and so on. So Isaiah Kanan started the first six games of the season, and then I think he was out for a game. That's where Elia Kobo stepped in. Kanan started for eight more games. Then I think he was out again, or they were thinking about benching him and they didn't quite pull the trigger yet. I think that was when so that's the first time they went point book. That was for one game, and then we were like, okay, point book, Kanan's. And then he started the next game. We were like, wait, what? So you're not fully committing to this?
And then
they went back again. Book started the next four games, and then they went away from point book for a game. I think that was when he got hurt. Somewhere in there where he got hurt.
Okobo or something.
Yeah, maybe that's a stub toe. That's a good call. Okobo for a game, then back to Booker for only one game. That's the Lakers game where he came back from the hammy way too quick and then re-aggravated it or whatever that was. Okobo starts for only two more games after that, and then De'Anthony Melton starts 25 in a row, and that is the longest streak any of these guys had in terms of starting at point guard.
Good job, De'Anthony.
He got hurt. So Okobo starts the next seven games, and in the middle of those seven games, that's where Tyler Johnson was acquired, so he starts the next 12 games. He gets hurt. So now point book for a game, Melton for two games, point book for a game, Melton for four games, then Okobo to close out the year for the last five. I looked it up. In those 37 games where Melton started 25 and Tyler Johnson started 12, they went 12-25. So 12 of their 19 wins came over that stretch where they had consistent point guard play. Both of those stretches included the 5 of 7 winning streaks as well, which, again, no coincidence. And I see people, a conversation about like the 76ers right now. Well, their starting lineup only played together for 10 games. Like, how are they supposed to figure that out? Which I completely agree with, but I'm just saying, when you look at the Suns and look at how much they've changed things the entire season, how were they supposed to win 25 games? I mean, people say, and just to take it to the playoffs again, I think Chris Hansen was the one who tweeted, like, if DJ Augustine is on the Suns, they win above 25 games or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess they do, but if they have a fully healthy team and a fully healthy, if their starting lineup, if there was some way for them to start the year with Johnson, Booker, Oubre, Warren, and Ayton, they win 26, 27 games probably. And if they have this type of injury thing still, but they at least start the season with that, go through training camp with that and everything, which is what we might be talking about next season anyway, to kind of preview it there. But that's what I had for that award. Did you have anything else on Igor?
Nope.
You up next, sir.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Kind of going off that, to further pound into your skull that this team was a bunch of weird veterans to start. I made an I'll see you later team because there were that many players, plus a bunch of power forwards who I did not make this list, who were like 10-day guys.
Is that like a we'll see you down the road, see you later, like see you later, man, or it's like see you later, dude?
It's like when you say see you later to the cashier at the checkout line and you won't see them later.
Oh, it's when you go to Quick Trip, they also say we'll see you next time, and you're like, what type of marketing ploy is this? Like, I know, and that's not a thing because there's a Quick
it's
Trip.
It's like the Applebee's I'll see one.
Yeah. So it's like they're so cocky that they know you're going to be back, and I'm like, that's. Can you guys relax for a second? See you later. That's like, the see you later I'm going with for
yeah,
this award.
It's like Applebee's will see you tomorrow. You won't because you don't go to Applebee's.
How did you wind up at Applebee's? That's
a really bad day. That's how.
Low-key, Applebee's is still kind of fire. Moving on.
I have done it when I... Yeah.
When you
I just like making fun of it.
Drinks.
The artichoke dip's really good. Anyway, I made a full team. So point guard... Isaiah Cannon. He started opening night. I'm going to jump to small forward. Trevor Ariza took that cash, got the bag, and did not like what he was doing.
Came in with good intentions, I really think, but after two or three games, him and Ryan Anderson did the same exact thing. They all looked around like, oh, no, this is... too far gone, and they started dogging it like everyone else did. And
I don't think Ryan was dogging it. That's where I'll break them two up, because I think Ryan is just not... he's just not there anymore as an athlete.
Yeah.
I thought he actually was a good locker room presence. Like, he and Bender were really close, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
Ariza, it's... I just don't understand them two. Like, I realize NBA players don't fully pay attention to everything in the league, but to not have any semblance of idea of how good this team is, what you're getting yourself into. Don't you think when McDonough called Trevor that night when free agency opened, he would just be like, all right, but just wondering what your guys' plans are. You know, like, are you going to get anyone else? Or, but apparently he was just like, oh, 15 million? Okay, cool. I'll sign that. Sounds good. Ryan Anderson's power forward, Tyson Chandler's center. His was more fair, where it's like, dude, you don't have it in the tank. Rashawn's better than you. Go home to LA. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Everyone got mad about helping LeBron. It's like, it's not going to help LeBron. He doesn't have anything left. My shooting guard, though, what?
You hear that sound right now?
No.
You heard nothing, right? There was no sound? That's the amount of Laker fans still defending Tyson Chandler and acting like he can still defend anything. You guys can shut up now. Thank you.
That narrative was hilarious. It's like, you guys haven't watched Tyson Chandler.
Again, I say this all the time. Don't blame me for not watching the Suns.
Or the people who blame James Jones, like, you let Tyson Chandler go help your friend LeBron. It's like, okay, if that's what you think, have fun with that thought.
Your shooting guard.
Who do you think it is?
Wayne Ellington.
Oh, I didn't even count him.
Austin Rivers.
I didn't even count him.
Troy Daniels?
Who's a really, really into shooting?
Troy Daniels again?
No, Jimmer.
Oh, God.
He still has an option for next year, but I'm making the leap to say that they will not pick that up. If I'm wrong, then, I'll take the loss on that.
I felt like I had some good energy walking in the building today, and like on this podcast too, and just from the room, I had actually forgotten for a couple of days.
You just
that
wiped
that
it,
but it's back. It's always going to come back too. Not now, Jimmer is my favorite tweet I've ever tweeted. It's just it reflects everything wrong about the Suns in three words.
They probably got some ratings bumps in those last few games, Utah.
Okay, moving on. Anything else you wanted to... Do you have a sixth man or...
No.
We talked about those guys so much.
Ray Spalding looked like an NBA athlete. That's about it. I don't know if he'll be back.
Kanan, okay. My second award is the Happy Accident Award to James Jones. Not really sure we were expecting him to be a general manager of this team, essentially, for an entire season, which is basically what he was. And that's a happy accident in and of itself because he turned out to be the right guy for the job. But within that was a couple of happy accidents in the other way where Jamal Crawford signs and you're like, okay, we discussed it at the time. You were more in on it than I was. And then I started to, once I allowed myself to get off of Hot Take Island and kind of think about it for a second, it made a lot more sense and having the extra ball handler and everything. And man, you can imagine how much of a nightmare and people will counter this and say they were awful when Jamal Crawford was on the court. He's washed, all this stuff. He sucks. And just think about that second unit led by Okobo every night, or just how the second unit would function without a veteran ball handler out there in general. Like and when he would share the floor, I think one of the things Igor didn't do well this year was not having him on the floor with Aiden enough. He was arguably the best at running a two-man game with Aiden. He just seemed to understand the need for it consistently. And Book is doing so much at so many times, he can't be a point guard, you know, and Jamal was able to be a point guard in some senses. So he turned out to be a great signing for this team. I mean, even if you absolutely despised watching him on the floor, I don't think you can argue in any way whatsoever that he was a bad signing for the team because of the locker room effect that he clearly had. And
yeah,
just how about the year that he had, like, mentoring Book anyway? Like, that's...
If you've followed basketball for just, like, what, 10 years, you could kind of get a sense that that signing was completely different than bringing in Tyson Chandler, even bringing in Ryan Anderson or Trevor Ariza. That was... He has a different aura about him. Just throughout the NBA because he's so well liked. So I think regardless of his plus minuses, his play, he was needed. And yeah, it made it fun to watch, at least for the very few things that were fun to watch down the stretch.
Yeah, he was great. And I hope he's back next year. And maybe I'm biased.
As an assistant coach.
As I really like talking to him, but if it's whether it's an end of the bench role where he has to fill in as a guy every now and then, or if he's back as an assistant coach or whatever, I believe I remember him saying on Twitter that he's not really interested in coaching at all and he would be more in a front office role. So maybe you can give him like a more elevated Ronnie Price kind of ambassador role where he's actually... It's not just an ambassador type of thing. He's actually responsible for something. Like maybe he's assistant of player development or something, and he's one of the guys working out with guys that, like, Cody Toppard is the guy right now. He's assistant to him or something. Like, I think that's a really smart move to keep him around the team because I think he needs to stay here.
I don't think he's going to retire, though. He's going to try not to.
But he's going to try not to retire, and it's going to be interesting to see where he goes from here, for sure. Kelly Oubre, obviously, again, not one that needs much explanation. I heard Gambo on the air, and he's been saying, talking about James Jones wrapping up this year and going into next year as a general manager, that he says, I don't care about how they got him, and he turned out to be a good deal. Actually, I do care a lot. They got him under bogus circumstances in a way where it was a three-team trade, and Kelly Oubre was going to Memphis in that trade, which means Dylan Brooks going to Phoenix in that. The archetype that the Suns agreed to, which means they wanted Dylan Brooks more than they wanted Kelly Oubre. That's how that whole circle goes, is they get Dylan Brooks because they get Trevor Ariza, and then so they have to get Kelly Oubre. That's how it goes around, and they wanted Dylan Brooks more than Kelly Oubre. 100%. Not saying I know this for a fact, but that's the way it worked out. That trade falls apart. Okay, we'll take Kelly Oubre, I guess. Fine. I mean, he's fine, and if we want to pay him, we'll pay him. And it's turned out to be the best move. James Jones might be the best move James Jones ever makes, and that's not saying that he's not capable of making a better move. It's just getting a guy like that for half a season of Trevor Ariza, who could be a serious long-term piece of your core. Yeah, that sound says it all. Not including Tyler Johnson here, because I think that was his first actual real great move great business done. Getting a guy who can come in here and help right now, right away, for Ryan Anderson, which he was going to sit on the end of the bench and make his money. And yes, he's a nice locker room presence, I suppose, but Tyler Johnson is actually a capable basketball player. Now, whether he comes in next year and he is the first guard off the bench, or he comes in next year and he's a starting point guard, I think next year he is going to be not a monumental, that's way too high of a word, but he's going to be an important part of what they do if he's here. The thing that Gambo has been reporting is that they really like the way Johnson's contract moves up when it goes to $19 million and that they'll be able to move that expiring. I think that's a bit of fantasy talk because
you have to have someone on the other end of that.
You have to have someone on the other end of that that makes $25 or $30 million or $20 million. And the fact is, not a lot of guys make that much money. And the guys that make that much money, teams do not want to trade them most of the time. Or they really, really want to trade those guys because they want to get rid of their bad contracts. So I don't. And this team is not in a situation where they trade Tyler Johnson's expiring for a 3-year deal and take a first round pick or something. They're way beyond stuff like that. That's the type of stuff that people who I'm not going to say will suggest to the Suns, and it's like, dude, they're far beyond the asset collection.
You gotta have. I mean, if you look at it this way, it's if Anthony Davis, for example, is still on the Pelicans, and they do need to trade him by February. Like, I think they're going to be really firm on not moving him unless a really good deal happens. If you need $19 million in some 3-way deal to get financially set, and the Suns can get it, take advantage of that and get a young player or a draft pick, I mean, that means you basically turned, what, Brandon Knight, Marquise Chris into De'Anthony Melton and a draft pick at the end of the day. So it's, there's value there, but I don't think it's going to be a Suns get a star move.
No.
And he's also valuable because he is a good leader, and he's cool. If they happen to go get a starting caliber point guard, he's cool coming off the bench. So
he's not going to be, I don't know if he's a certified good player in the league with the way that he played this season, particularly in Miami. He was definitely 2 years ago and even a year ago, I think, even when he regressed a bit, but he regressed even more this year. But he's good for you some nights and really, really good for you on some nights too. And he'll be important if they keep him around. So I think it kind of ends there, and the way I'll tie in the happy accident thing again is that I think the best thing for this team to do, I argued for it and against it, but the best thing ultimately for them to do, if everyone is down, which everyone including Devin Booker is down, they just need to remain patient. They need to let Ayton and Booker get to the stage, which I've been saying is Ayton's third year, is where they really start to go for this and the young guys are capable of carrying them. But getting to that point is going to be difficult. But it seems like that's what they're doing right now. It seems like they are just going to remain patient and wait for that. And props to him for doing that during the season. I think you can look at it two ways. You can say that you can give him props for it, or you can say you didn't get a point guard. What are you doing? Which I also believe to be true. I think they should have traded the Milwaukee pick for a point guard in the second week in August, September, October.
Yeah, it's just a matter of would you have gotten Tyler Johnson for that. Tyler Johnson caliber player. Yeah.
Exactly. Someone like that. That's a really good way to describe it. And now it's going to be interesting to see the last layer of that to me is if he actually turns out to be a competent general manager, they kind of just lucked into this.
Yeah.
He was brought on as vice president of basketball operations, but not someone that, I mean, you could look at him and say, sure, he's going to be a GM in 5 or 10 years, but if it turns out that you turn him into a GM in less than 2 years and he's actually good at this, happy accident. That's my award.
Okay.
What's your next one?
You won't get this because it's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but it's the...
I just need to watch this show for the podcast at this point. This is too straight. And someone tweeted us another thing from that, though. I was like, I don't...
The Dennis System Inspiring Hope Award, which not necessarily inspiring a lot of hope. It's probably false hope, but it's inspiring some hope, and we need all that we can get here. That'd be Dragan Bender, who looked like an NBA player who doesn't have stats still. Like, he just doesn't produce stats. And the stats he does produce are bad. He didn't shoot well. He looked good, though. Like, I know it was down the stretch where was the biggest parts of where we watched him, but, like, that small stretch where he replaced DeAndre and Rashawn Holmes, he looked like a legit center. And I want to remind everyone that he's 21 still, and when he came here, they were jerking him around as far as position. He was, like, thin as heck. He was just physically not ready to play in the NBA, and this year was the first year where it looked like, hey, he held on some weight. He still moves really well. And we've discussed this going back all the way to when he was a rookie. He's more of a center, like, especially if he's not shooting, he's a center. But you can see still where he could become a good player. Just a guy who's not going to make mistakes, a guy who's going to keep an offense moving. I honestly feel like he's not going to get any crazy. He's going to get a minimum salary probably, but like the Spurs, for example, are a team that they could look at and be like, let's just sign this dude for like 2 or 3 years and see what he's got. And heck, if when LaMarcus Aldridge goes down or something, or Davis Bertans or whatever, maybe we can call on him in like a year or so. And like him being coached up, I could see him breaking through somewhere. So of that terrible draft where Marquise Chris is still getting technicals and stuff and fouling every 10 times down the court, that's a little positive, I guess.
Draft's gotten some good bounce back with the way Buddy Hield's kind of turned it around, but
that's true.
Still very ugly, but the Chris Dunn being bad after Dragan Bender helps the burn of Hield and Jamal Murray being the sandwich, being the meat.
I'm not, yeah.
That sandwich.
I'm not
saying he was worth that draft pick, but...
Not at all. Yeah. You think he's an NBA player?
I think so. Everyone just keeps making jokes about him going to Europe. I'm like, I would not put it past a good team to sign him.
I still saw too many moments where it was like, there's the Dragan Bender I know. I saw too many this year still. Need like 40% less. Saw too much of it. My next award, we appreciate it, but thanks, I guess, award. TJ Warren. Hey, thanks, I guess, for turning into a tremendous three-point shooter, but I kind of stole your idea mid-podcast here. I just thought of this and made a team of the TJ Warren All-Stars. Dennis Schroeder, Zach LaVine. I couldn't figure out a three or four in time, so I went with Rudy Gay in a positive light, where it's like if you look at him years down the line on the Spurs and Enes Kanter. Which, I mean, hey, look at the game. He swung game one. I'm not saying Dennis Schroeder or Zach, any of those guys are bad.
Is Alonzo Trier the sixth man of this group? Or?
It's complicated All-Stars, I guess we should explain, because they put up their numbers. They have, that's a bad way of putting it, but they are good. They are good basketball players. But in terms of getting them to play good for your team, it takes a certain fit. It takes OKC having him trade off with Russ and being better defensively and being part of one of the best defenses in the league to get something out of Schroeder, who's been good for them. He was awful in game one, but he played well. Zach LaVine, Chicago's not the place to get the most out of him right now. We'll see how that core grows around him, because it looks like he's there for a while with the contract he signed. Rudy Gay in San Antonio has been a nice little thing for them, and there's been moments in that flutter of his career where it's been good, but it's been a lot of the TJ Warren zone where you're like,
Jeff Green fall into this?
I was about to say Jeff Green was the first guy I thought of, but I think he's just bad. I just think Jeff Green sucks. Enes Kanter is a thing where even in that game, man, he had so many moments where you're like, dude, what are you doing? Like just missing layups in transition where he's like trying full speed to lay it in like a guard. It's like, just stop yourself as the 7-foot giant you are and just put the ball in the hoop, my guy. Like stop trying to sprint and finish, traveling, doing all this stuff. I went to a game last weekend in Portland where he just had these plays where like the whole crowd makes that kind of noise where they're like, come on, man, what are you doing? But he swung that game for them against OKC, and swinging playoff games is a thing. That is a legitimate thing that he can do. And I think TJ's in that group where if you get him in the right place and get the most out of him, or even 80% out of him, I just don't think you're going to get that here. It's just not what they need with who's at the top right now.
Am I up?
Yeah, go for it.
I don't know what to name this award, but I'm going to name it, I don't know, the best child award or something like that, but I can't think of a good one.
The best youngin?
Best youngin, yeah. I can just do that.
Gold medal youngin?
Yeah, DeAndre is that. First play.
He is my... I just did most improved award for the whole season.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, he's my guy.
In season, we can talk about that in a sec, but this is more based off... He's legitimately like a 7-foot like kid. my friend sent me a text with Devin Booker's, like, after they did locker cleanout, Devin Booker went to New York, or Brooklyn, I guess. That's New York. Watched D-Wade's game and was just Instagramming himself dressed fashionably on a balcony overlooking something. DeAndre Ayton's at home watching some Bumblebee movie. And that pretty much summarizes how much, like, he's just like a big kid. And I think the Suns
probably... He's 14 years old.
Yeah.
And he's gonna get there. I'm not saying he's immature, or I'm saying he's immature, but he's...
In like a... I don't... What's the word?
Not in a negative way.
No.
We can just say it like that. Not in a negative way at all.
Endearing way.
Endearing way. Endearing's the right
word.
And
I think, honestly, like, when you look at them considering Luka versus him, like, Luka's had this party boy image. He's young. He's been famous for forever. DeAndre doesn't want that. He just wants to play basketball and go home and watch his Bumblebee movie. And play basketball really well. And I also kind of was thinking about him most improved, and I had him there for in season most improved. Like, we talked about it over one pod entirely, where it was just, he's come a long way. Like, he was so raw, and people don't understand that coming in. The Suns did a good job, I think, of just making him focus on the little things: rim protection, communication, defense, and he got better in those areas. So do you have more on that as far as him taking that leap?
Zach Lowe said it on his podcast, where this is part of what we talked about, where I said he just looked like the Arizona version of himself for the first 6 weeks of the season. And
yeah,
Lowe described it where he was completely clueless and hopeless on defense at the start of the season to the end of the season, where he was where you should be at as a rookie center at the end of your rookie season. He's on pace for where you need to be at in your development, which is extremely encouraging, because that was one of the weakest spots, if not the weakest spot, of his outlook, was him being bad on defense, but also just how clueless he looked all the time, and just thinking, like, can this guy improve? Can he improve as a defender? And he did. And then offensively, I think I have been the one person on the planet talking about this more than anyone, just the amount of moves that he has, because it was the biggest thing that I was concerned about with him. So I guess I just answered my question of if this was the... My biggest concern about him always was that, okay, the defense, fine, whatever, but offensively, does he have enough, like, moves and fluidity and just stuff overall in his bag to score 25 points a game, or score 23 points
him,
a game,
yeah,
be a number one option in the post consistently? Can he do the dribbling? I talked about that all the time. Can he do the dribbling? Starting to see more dribbling, but more importantly, we're seeing the type of dribbling where his back is to the basket most of the time where he's dribbling. I'm not asking for him to face up from 20 and take two dribbles. Like, yes, he can do that, and yes, eventually I think he is going to do that, but just the dribbling with his back to the basket and just going beyond, like, two strong dribbles, putting your shoulder down and putting up a baby hook, like, mix some moves in there, and he absolutely did. I've written a story on this where I go through all the moves that he made. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen the videos. It's, I think, something that should be talked about a lot more with him that is just not being discussed from a perspective that we've had, where we looked at him at the start of the draft process to where he is now. He has grown exponentially.
I mean, before he played a game for the Suns, we were discussing how he didn't even know how to take two strong dribbles and put his shoulder into a guy for a jump hook, which we knew he had a jump hook, but he didn't know how to even get that off. And then slowly throughout the season, I guess over a season, it's not slow, but you saw him starting to implement that. Then you see the turnaround fades. Then you see him hitting a shot over Kevin Durant, who's probably as tall as him. And Kevin Durant looking like, what the hell did I just see? So that's how far he came.
The guard turnaround is basically what we're going to be calling that. It's basically the KD turnaround. It's like someone 7 feet being able to take a turnaround like a guard. But KD does everything like a guard when he's 7 feet.
And now, I mean, he talked multiple times at the end of the year about wanting to bring the ball up the court like Giannis, which I don't know how realistic that is or how much the Suns want to see that.
I wrote a full dealio on that and kind of broke down. Here's the one example we have of him dribbling at full court, and it looked pretty cool to me. But we'll see, and I think the most reassuring part of that was Jamal telling me that he thinks the best thing about DeAndre is his passing.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from a perimeter player seeing a big rebounded and being able to see where the kickout pass is immediately. But he also had some passes. There was the pocket pass he made to, I think, Josh on a cut in Memphis that was in that piece where it was like, whoa, that is a Marc Gasol, like Gasol brother type of pass that he just made. I think he is right. The amount at which he improved, I think Luka Doncic played better than him this season, obviously. I think Trae Young played better than him. I think there's even a case that if you just were able to ignore the fact that Bagley had these stretches where he was hurt and things like that, him at his top level, Bagley was maybe even higher than Aiden at his top level. But with that being said, I am farther away than I have ever been before at turning down the notion that he... I think there's still a chance that he could be the best player in this class. I never denied that was a possibility because of his upside, but that was a lot of me like fantasy land. Yeah, he has upside. He has this limitless upside, but I don't think he's going to get there. And I still don't think he's going to get there because that's just like him becoming like a top five center of all time.
Yeah.
But I think there's a stronger chance, in my opinion, that he is going to be the best player in this class than I thought at the end of the season and the beginning of the season. And that includes...
Everyone else did well.
And that includes Luka averaging, what, 22, like 6-6 or something?
Yeah.
Whatever he averaged. And Trae Young averged pretty much like 25-9 to end the year after the All-Star break. And I think there's a greater chance because of just the way he improved. And if that improvement continues and the graph doesn't change or whatever, from now until the end of his third year, he's going to be a monster for a decade. Just a freaking monster. I almost just said the bad word. That's the first time I've ever come close to cussing on a mic like this. Wow. I got into it.
I just want to point out, we always talk about big guys with injuries, especially when they're young and they're playing a lot. I mean, aside from an ankle tweak to end the year, which, of course, they were smart to shut him down, like, these other bigs in this class kind of ended the year on down notes, like Mo Bamba, Jaren Jackson Jr. had injuries that were a little more serious. And DeAndre looked like he went through his ups and downs game by game, but he didn't wear down. He physically looked better throughout the year. Like I still think he was out of shape to start it. So
yeah, 100%. You have two more left. I have one more left, so why don't you go ahead again?
I don't have to go deep on this, but go to quote, I got Tyler Johnson. I guess Kelly could be up there, too. The two new guys, though.
Jamal for me, without question, not even close.
See, Jamal's like too positive.
We view this
differently,
yeah.
Jamal is like great for insight, but like I guess I was thinking like surprise, like you never know what you're going to get type of thing. You just go to them whenever, like, I have no idea what to write about. Who should I talk to, Kelly or Tyler?
Well, it's... this
Jamal,
is
you have
be,
to have a specific purpose in mind.
This is going to be super inside baseball journalists with a capital J talk right now, but depends on what you, like, value, I guess. And I just... The thing that I value the most when talking to players and coaches and everything, and I think I'll call this, like, the Torrey Lovello thing, because I think he's fantastic at all these things, is one... honestly taking in your question and respecting it, which goes a long way. And again, I'm going to preface this with, oh boy, if I was an athlete or a coach or whatever, I would not be good at that probably. Number two, being able to take that respect and genuinely thinking about the question. This is where Josh Jackson is a 14 out of 10. He legitimately thinks about his answer every time, because when he starts talking, he usually says and pauses for a second because he's thinking about his answer. And then three, taking that answer and giving you something that is a good answer
that you can
use as a journalist. And I think like that third part is maybe where like Jamal teeters off a bit for you. And it just depends on the specific question that you're asking. Because sometimes he'll give you something, like you said, that's just way too positive or whatever. And I think, most of the guys on the team are really great about it. And the coach too.
He used to not be that way.
Yeah, DeAndre is really good with it. He'll always, the respect part maybe not so much, because he looked at me like I never watched him play basketball before when I asked him about dribbling. And I was just like, yeah, man, you don't dribble that much. But
yeah,
I love talking
with
to DeAndre, by the way.
With your qualifications again for being good at this, like Tyler was like in really limited interactions with me, I guess. But he was always like really honest and was like, oh yeah, when I came over, I told these guys they were not good at basketball. Or like, he didn't say that. He told them what Miami thought of Phoenix as a franchise, and he's like, sometimes you just got to be honest and be able to self-reflect in that way with being told what other people think of you. Kelly was good in like the he's going to say something fun type of thing, because Kelly always would say something like that. Like his very first interview on our radio station, what did he say? He's going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Not Jamal, just a pretty face.
Dude, Jamal would be like, yeah, as far as just straight basketball, Jamal is really good. Also, he has lots of stories.
Lots of stories. Lots of good stories. Lots of Didn't stories. Even get into the stories. That's why I want him back. I need more stories. He told me about the story of how he got asked about MJ and like playing with MJ in pickup, because that's like one of the signature Jamal Crawford stories. And then it was this weird thing where like he actually knows Kevin Love because of his dad. And it was another story. And it was like he can just like, you just mention a name, you can be like Raymond Felton, and he'll be like, oh, well, one time me and Ray. And it's just like you can, he could probably just go on and on. My final award, and this is to bring it back to Game of Thrones. I couldn't think of a good enough title for this, and I just went with it. This is, if I had more time,
something more topical.
The Princes That Were Promised Awards.
There you go.
To Mikal Bridges and D'Anthony Melton. I do not mean this in a Azor Ahai level way where they are the saviors of the Phoenix Suns by any means, so I have to twist it in a bit here with some context. But if you look at the players who maximized Devin Booker at the small forward position and the point guard position, and you score them on a 1 to 10 scale, Mikhail's rocking already like a pretty solid like 7.58 already at his current stage of development. Melton's more at like a 5 or a 6 right now, but the potential and upside, like he could get in that Mikhail range as a point guard. And I think that they showed enough in their rookie seasons, especially Mikhail, for both of them where you better be sure if you are even thinking about trading one of them. And I'm including this is more so Mikhail, obviously, than D'Anthony. But I think even with D'Anthony, it's like you better be sure that he's not even in a situation where he doesn't develop the maximization of his development isn't there. You still better be sure that he's not like the first guard off the bench and maybe he plays crunch time with Book or something. You better know, because guys like that are so complimentary to star players.
As you watch Pat Bev get Kevin Durant ejected in the playoffs, like he's a very different player than that, but that's kind of the archetype of, I think, what he could be.
He is the perfect Clipper. Like anyone on the Clippers right now is that type of player. Like Montrezl Harrell, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Landry Shamet, Garrett Temple, Zubac, like that whole roster is like, man, if you had like the perfect like power forward, like Blake Griffin or whatever next to like a stretch four more than Blake, but like Blake next to Zubac, like Zubac would be perfect for him. And it's just the list that goes on and on. Like, man, if you put Shai next to Book, or you put Shai next to Clay or CJ McCollum or whatever, and Landry Shamet, if you put him next to Kyrie, or like it, there's a lot of those types of complementary players on that team, and that's where Mikal and D'Anthony are both in there, in my opinion. And I just think that, like I said, I think that after spending a couple weeks thinking about it and not really deciding whether I think they should keep D'Anthony or Ellie, I think D'Anthony is the guy for that sole reason. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Does Ellie have more upside? Absolutely. Is there a strong chance that Ellie is better than D'Anthony in 2-3 years? I think there is. But I think it's all about numero uno on this team, and Ellie's just a scoring guard off the bench in that situation, and D'Anthony's actually a guy that could start next to him. And I'm not saying anytime soon. I'm saying like 3, 4, or 5 years from now. Yeah. But yeah.
Is that the end of your list?
Are you good? That's the end of mine.
All right. My last one is MVP.
Oh.
Ooh. Roll anticlimactic here.
Wonder who it is.
It's Devin Booker. Do I need to explain that?
We shouldn't explain it, but we should also just talk about him for just a little bit, just to kind of not do the thing where it's like LeBron James is the best basketball player on the planet. We don't need to talk about this kind of thing.
We already thought Devin Booker would be on track to be a star. He got better this season than any of his previous seasons to me. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I think I threw it into Basketball Reference where like averaging over 26 points, over 6 assists, over 4 rebounds, I think, per game for a season. That's happened 70 times, and only twice has that person not been an all-star. The other season was Damian Lillard, what, I think it was 15 or 16, when he got snubbed and it was a big deal. Book wasn't an all-star. Book probably won't make an all-NBA team, but you throw those numbers on any team that wins 30 or more games, and I don't know how you can argue that he's not an all-star. And he's getting better. So to me, that's like every expectation and hurdle and goal we set for him, he surpasses each year he's done that. So I don't know what more you want from the guy, but it'll be interesting to see what they put around him.
You know, the Thanos meme gif, whatever, when it's like you see the stone attached and it's like he gets stronger or whatever.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about him after this season, where my confidence in him being a number one guy and him being a franchise player, and I just feel so much more confident year by year, and that has continued this year. That is not recency bias from the 45 or 50. My favorite game of the year was when they blew out the Spurs at home and he had 15 points and 13 assists or whatever. That's something me and Jamal actually talked about when I did that feature on him.
He was so good that game.
He was incredible in that game, and like I told Jamal, and I was like, what do you think, or I asked him, I was like, what is that exactly, and how does he decide when to do that? And he's like, it's just reading what did he went into that game and knew that he was going to be able to do that. He just read the floor a couple of times when it tried to establish himself in different ways early, and then was able to tell, this is the spot I'm going to put myself in to help the team win the most. And that was how I ended that entire piece, was saying he just cares about winning and cares about doing what's best to help them win. And we've already seen multiple examples of that. We've seen stretches where he has played good defensively, to take it back to Zach Lowe again, because I think he is the chief number one example of a basketball analyst that we have around, with how much watching he does and how smart he is. He actually said in one of his 10 things I like, don't like, that he actually thinks that Booker can be an average defender in the right situation. But it's like, he's a high volume scorer on a bad team right now. Do you expect him to be good on defense or even average? He's going to be terrible. I will go as far to say as I think he's at least, if injuries don't get in his way enough, like if he just has a year like where he plays 65, 70 games a year, I'll even go like that low. 65 to 75 games a year is like the threshold for him, really, for me to say this, but I think he's at least a second team All-NBA player at least once.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's an MVP candidate, or if, I don't know if he'll lead the league in scoring one year, or that, but I'm willing to go beyond all-star and say like he will be one of the four best guards in the NBA at least once in his career, if not more.
That's safe, I think.
Yeah, I'm very, you know me and the listeners know me well enough to say like grand proclamations and stuff like that, looking into the future, I get scared of those, but like I can confidently say that about him right now, which is hilarious all at the same time, because the narrative around him, especially we learned with the 45, 50, and 55-point games, didn't really change at all.
Let's just say if you threw James Harden on this team, they wouldn't win that many more games. So,
ooh, I like that take. Man, how many more?
I don't think they'd hit 30. If every single thing happened this year and you had James Harden playing the same games Devin Booker did.
Man. I think my guess would be like 34.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's 15 more wins. But am I getting like 75 games of James Harden?
No, you're getting however many Book play.
I'm getting 64. Okay, well, they're definitely not winning. I'm trying to think.
That takes away a good number.
A lot of that would be trusting Igor, I think. If I thought 30, it would be like, can Igor do his best Mike D'Antoni impression here? Basically, do they have the guys around him?
No.
They don't, first of all. And how much is that maximization, I'm using that word a lot, for Harden in D'Antoni and the players around him, how much does that go away in Phoenix?
If you put Mike D'Antoni as coach and you put James Harden in the games Devin Booker played and everything else is the same, I think it would still be hard-pressed to get 30.
I think like 27 or 28 is where I would land.
Well, no one's ever going to check you on that because that's not how the world works.
It's nope. No one can prove me right or wrong, because just don't send that to Rockets fans. Oh, God. Because they are something in their own right. And if you thought you guys were spicy, just wait until you get a Rockets fan in your mention. My mentions, my God. We will be back next week. That is going to be NFL draft week, so we better do that podcast early in the week, Kevin, because it's going to be a busy end of the week for us in the offices. Maybe more kind of we kind of dive in to the draft in a way where it's here are the guys that are in. Here's where all the narratives stand at this time. We're still waiting for Zion to declare, right?
Yeah.
I think he's
Reddish
just waiting.
Is in. Barrett's in.
I think he's just waiting for like a day when he can dominate like the news cycle. Is there a day when the NBA playoffs aren't on? There's got to be like one or something where it's like Pacers, Celtics, and then nothing else.
Is there anything else that's around? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Got to get wait till Masters is over, okay? That's where we are
Check.
Today. Yeah.
He'll do it. Yeah.
I bet he'll do it.
I bet he'll enter the draft. That's my bold stance there. Hopefully we're not doing a breaking news podcast this week.
You really have set us up for this.
Oh, I super did. I don't even know when I'm going to feel safe. That's what Bird asked me on Saturday when I was on Arizona
Sports Saturday.
3 games
into the season, yeah.
He asked me when do I feel like I'm going to like it's going to be like safe, and I was like for now it's like when Gambo or someone else reports that he's going to be the coach leading in the next season. But I mean when the season starts, my God, never going to feel safe.
I'm never going to feel safe ever. That's just how I've taught myself to live.
I'm never going to feel safe ever. The story of being a Phoenix Suns fan, that is going to be the Empire of the Suns first novel. We'll be back next week to discuss our plans with that novel and more. Talk to you then.